here shortly, so I just thought we'd better get going in the interest of time. Before we do start this morning, I'd just like to say a couple of comments. You know, as we start this meeting at around 8:03 or so, we have to remember that all across our state, there's about 131,000 students, 134,000 students, and that are going to school. You know, they're waking up, they're getting on buses, and they're going to our public schools. And so every time that we think that, you know, this might be difficult to come here and get here by 8 o'clock in the morning and start our days, you know, I think if we do it in the spirit of why we're coming here, and why we're coming here is those 130,000 students that are all across the state of Alaska, from Barrow down to Ketchikan, just looking for an opportunity, looking for a chance to make their lives better. They might not recognize it that way if you're a first grader, but nevertheless, that's really what it's about. As we go through this process of budgeting, as we go through this process of analyzing numbers and things like that, you know, in the end, it's about those kids that are relying on the state of Alaska and us to give them a good shot. So if we keep that in mind, I'd like to start. Good morning, Representative
Good morning.
Drummond.
Sorry to be late.
No problem. So this morning we have with us, we're going to be looking at the basic foundation formula, and we have Ms. Teschner with us this morning, Ms. Lobaugh. We also have Deputy Commissioner Santa Efrid, and we also have Ellen Blackwell, who I just met this morning, the finance director and the foundation formula kind of manager of the funds and the big picture. So thank you all for being here this morning very, very much. And if you would come forward and put your names on the record when you're testifying, we can get this thing going.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Mindy Lobaugh, and I'm School Finance Specialist with the Department of Education and Early Development, and I'd like to thank you for your service to our state and for the kids.
And I'm Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services with the Department.
All right, so with that said, I'm going to move into our formula. The current state public school funding formula was adopted under SB 36 in 1998. It was implemented in 1999. The public school funding formula is defined in Alaska Statute 1417. So we're going to provide an overview. First, it'll be the October count and the average daily membership, which I'll refer to as ADM. We will cover the calculations of adjusted average daily membership, or also referred to as AADM. We'll go over the calculations of basic need, the funding components of basic need, so who pays, and the additional funds that are above basic need that districts receive. So average daily membership. The average daily membership is the number of enrolled students during the 20 school day count period that ends the fourth Friday in October. The reports are due within 2 weeks after the end of the 20-day school count period, and projections for the following year are due on November 5th. So who qualifies as a student? The eligibility for state foundation funding is a child who is 6 years of age before September 1st and under the age of 20 and has not completed the 12th grade. Or a child who is 5 years of age before September 1st, they may enter kindergarten. And a child with a disability and an active individualized education program, or IEP, may attend school if at the age of 3 or under the age of 22 by July 1. I'd also like to point out, I put the references of those statutes that point to the various aspects of the formula. Okay, so there are six steps to creating a district-adjusted ADM, and I always like to say, with the formula, it's kind of two sides to it. So the first side is the adjusted ADM, and the other side is going to be who pays. So right now we're going to focus on district-adjusted ADM, and the first step is we adjust for school size. Then we will adjust for the district or apply the district cost factor. We'll apply the special needs factor. We apply the vocational and technical education factor. We add the intensive service counts, and we add correspondence student counts at the end. Once that is done, we have equaled the district adjusted ADM, which will be used in calculating the state aid entitlement.
Excuse me, Ms. Lobaugh. The first step there in the process, ADM school size, could you review for us how school size impacts ADM or impacts the allotment that goes to that particular school?
So I think the next,
okay.
Chairman Ortiz, the next couple slides will do that. If not, you know, please let me know. I'd be happy to.
It does, as a matter of fact.
Further clarify.
I see it now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem. So first we're going to adjust for ADM school size. And what you see at the top is the school size chart with various references from 1 through 8. The first thing we're going to do with a district is identify the community. So a community under 10 is added to the next smallest school in the district with an ADM greater than 10. If the community has 10 through 100, then grades K through 12 ADM is combined and adjusted once and adjusted as one school. If they are between 101 and 425 ADM, for grades K through 6 and 7 through 12, they are adjusted separately. They are adjusted as two schools. And greater than 425, the ADM of each facility is administered separately as one school is adjusted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnston.
So if I understand this correctly, school districts are encouraged then to have more schools if you have greater than 425, more physical schools. So you're adjusted for each. So if you had 10 elementary schools and maybe some one or two of those elementary schools are under enrollment, but they get a greater adjustment for size by having those two extra schools. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I think that's a fair assessment. The idea is with each adjustment that is occurring based on the number of average daily membership that are in the schools, there are certain costs that are locked in for operations and maintenance of each school. So if you have fewer ADM than the capacity of the school, you still have to run that bigger facility. So it's the thinking that your adjustment's a little higher when you're in a smaller ADM range so that you can still meet those costs, educate your kids, and pay your instructors. As you get bigger, like Anchorage, they have several facilities. And the belief is that as you get greater in your size and you're filling it to capacity, you're meeting those costs and you're able to meet the instructional costs of education to the students. Does that help answer your question? And it might help as we go through.
Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. Through the chair, what defines a community?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, a community is defined, for example, like Cuspuck. It is like I want to give you that most definite definition of it, but a community is a group of people. A group of of families and people that are living within a village, a city, that reside in that village and city and support and have residents there.
Follow up. So is it city bounds or?
My apologies, that other mic was not working. Follow up through the chair. So this is city bound or a village, or it's by district, or it's by?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, I think the best way to look at a community is exactly how DCRA does a Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Thank you. And that is where we take our definition of community from, where they have defined it, and they have a listing on their site that clarifies the communities of each area. And some of those communities are taxable, some are not. But largely, you'll see with the formula, as we do like a required local effort, which I'll get to later, we work with DCRA or the State Assessor's Office. So it's kind of a joined understanding of what a community is. It's not just how education looks at it. It's really how the state looks at it. But for a definition, if you like, I could get back to you and show you what I use. Just off the top of my head, that's about is where I can get to.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. Okay, so we were looking at community as it relates to the school size table. There are two other aspects to this, and that are in here, and those are alternative schools and charter schools. So alternative schools with an ADM of 175 or greater and administered as a separate facility, the ADM will be adjusted separately unless, one, it is in the first year of service with an ADM between 120 to 175 and receives an adjustment of 1.33. So instead of being in the table, we're taking, let's say, the alternative schools at 125. We'll take that 125 and multiply it by 1.33 and get the school size adjustment. That's what that is saying. The next one is if it had an ADM of 175 or greater in the prior year, but drops below 175 in the current fiscal year, it will receive an adjustment of 1.33. Or if it has an ADM of less than 175, it shall be counted as a part of the school in the district with the highest ADM. So number two is kind of giving that alternative school a little bit of a grace year, but if they can't get back above 175, they'll fall into the highest school. The school in the district with the highest ADM. The second one is charters. So charter schools with an ADM of 150 or greater is adjusted as a separate facility unless, one, it is in the first year of service with an ADM between 75 to 150. It'll receive an adjustment of 1.45. So again, they're not in the school size chart when they're between 75 and 150. Mm-hmm. If, say, they have 100, they will be multiplied times that 1.45 adjustment, and that'll be their school size. Or if it has an ADM of 75 or greater in the prior year, but it drops below that in the current fiscal year, it will receive an adjustment of 1.45. Or it continues to stay below 75, then it will just receive an adjustment of 1.18. But they do go through the formula independently. Mm-hmm. So the example, I will cover one that is a city borough, and I will cover one that is a regional educational attendance area. For now, we're going to focus on the city borough aspect of the formula. So we're using known public schools as our example, and it is using FY 2017 projection. At this point, I just want to point out, in your packet, you should have this document. Mm-hmm. This document will coordinate with the slides here. Really, it's the last two pages of this document. And I will refer to it, or you will see at the bottom of the pages as I move through where to find it in here. another aspect that makes this nice is you can look at your particular district to see how theirs is moving, if that helps you. Okay, so Nome Elementary School, when they projected 380. The junior senior high school is at 255. The Anvil City Science Academy, which is a charter school in Nome, is at 60. The Nome Youth Facility is 14, and youth facilities are paid on bed count. And the Extension Correspondence Program is 10. So the total ADM that they submitted for their projection was 719. Okay, so now we see the school size table again. And we are going to apply the elementary school. So what you see here is the elementary school was submitted at 380 ADM. Now, we go up into the chart above, and we find what range that falls in for school size. And you can see that it's reference 6, where it says 250 to 399.99. The way to run the numbers, if you were to run this in a 10 key, I'm going to read it actually in more of a backwards fashion for the calculation because it will calculate more logically if you were to run those numbers yourself. So the 380 is plugged in where it says ADM. You subtract out 250. You multiply it by the 0.97. And then you add in 326.1. So that the result is a school size adjustment of 452.2. Now we're going to do the junior senior high school, and they had an ADM of 255. Again, the reference from above is still 6, so they fall between the 250 and the 399.99. So we're going to subtract out the 250. We're going to multiply in the 0.97. And we're going to add 326.1. So now the school size adjustment for their junior senior high school is 330.95. Anvil Charter School, as you see, they have 60 ADM. They have stayed below the 75 threshold. I don't believe they've ever gone above the 75 threshold. So they get an adjustment of 1.18 as a charter school, which is 70.8. And then finally, the youth facility, which is 14 and falls within reference 1, and that's that 10 through 19.99, so they get a flat adjustment of 39.6. And now we can total that all up to get our school size adjusted ADM of 893.55. And this is the number we're going to work with as we move through the categories.
We have a question from Representative Johnson.
To the chair. I'm trying to figure out how you get to, let's say, reference number 6, where you start with 326.10. Is that, it's not a mean average, is it? Or is between 250 and 399? Where do those numbers come from?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the McDowell group put this together when they were creating the school size table. I don't have direct knowledge of how they came to the, when they chose 326.1. As I mentioned, it's I believe my understanding is that what they're trying to do is create an adjustment that is reasonable to the size of the schools in the district and in the state. So I don't have the direct decision behind those calculations, but I am more than happy to pull that from SB 36 so you can see how that began 16 years ago or whatever.
Since it's the formula, I'm sure, was policy-driven, it would be interesting to know the policy behind it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
If I can just add a little bit, I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I think your question, Representative Johnson, is answered through a statute, 1417.440, in that in section 1417.450, there's a little table there and things like that that kind of shows you how they arrived at that particular number that you asked about. So it's within the Alaska statutes. And like I said, I haven't had a chance to actually examine it, but it looks like it's there.
Thank you.
Proceed.
Okay. So there is a hold harmless provision. The hold harmless provision was established for those districts experiencing a reduction in enrollment. To determine the eligibility, the district sum total of the school size adjustment is compared against the prior fiscal year. If a decrease of 5% or greater has occurred, then the prior fiscal year becomes the base. So what this is saying is we just got done building our total school size adjustment, and we're going to take that adjustment and we're going to look at the previous year. So that was 17. Here's 16's total school size adjustment, and we're going to see, did Nome School District drop down by 5%? You have to have dropped by 5% in school size adjustment. If they did, then it activates this formula. The FY16 becomes that base they refer to. So in year one, it says in the first year, they'll get 75% of that difference added back on to their 16 school size adjustment. So we're going to move forward. Let's say we're in FY18 now. We total up the school size adjustment again, and we're going to compare it back again to the base, that is 16, and we're going to say, are you still below your 16 base? It doesn't have to be 5% at this point because you triggered it, but are you still below it? And if you are, then you will retain 50% of the difference between your base and where you are now, and that'll be added again at FY18. And then as we move to the third part, we'll go to FY19, and if they are still below that base in 16, they will retain 25% of the difference, and that will be added back on to their school size adjustment. The idea is that a district does not go into shock over a migration of students or a loss of enrollment. It helps to transition them and their budget at a reasonable pace to their new lower count. Now, if the count, let's say, goes up in the second year when they're supposed to get a 50% adjustment, but it's higher than the base year, then it shuts off. The hold harmless is not needed because they've stabilized again. So that is the idea of that provision. So here you see Nome Public Schools. They actually have not needed the hold harmless provision since 2012. That was the last time they received it for 25% of hold harmless. But you can see the comparison being done here. What I've done is I've showed you on the left is their ADM, then on the right is their school size adjusted ADM, and the same, so you see 16 and 17. So since there's an increase in this case, the district does not need hold harmless.
Excuse me, I have a question. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering how that interacts with the alternative and charter school calculations. Are they not covered under that provision?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, they are covered because, remember, we're looking at the total school size adjustment. So when I did that comparison, it included Nome, their Anvil school. So it is in there.
Oh. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Follow up? No.
No.
Okay.
That's all.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Kopp.
And so the under looking at the FY17 projected ADM of 719 and then the school size adjustment of 893, so not quite a 200 student increase there when you look at the adjusted ADM. And then we're applying a district cost factor on top of that. Just, I guess, a couple thoughts. Is it easier just to say it costs 20% more to educate out here rather than go through a very complicated formula? You know, I know Northern Economics or somebody else establishes. I totally understand that. It's in statute, Mr. Chairman. I understand that. But it seems like it is hard to follow. And rather than going based on just what the cost of education is in an area to justify a base student enrollment increasing by almost 200 and then putting a district cost factor on top of that. And then I guess that was more of a comment, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. But my second thought is it the local school district that has primary responsibility to determine whether or not they're going to continue to carry a school, or is that more working with DEED? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Representative Kopp, it is local control, so it is the district's decision if they can afford that. And I just want to add to your thought, the district cost factor has not been put in yet. That will be next. Right. But still, what you said still applies.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead. Proceed.
So now we are at the district cost factor. The cost factors are specific to each school district, and they range from 1.0, which is Anchorage, to 2.116, which is Yukon Flats. The cost factors were reviewed by American Institute for Research in 2002. That study was not accepted, so the Institute of Social and Economic Research did a study of the cost factor, and that was accepted in 2005. And the current cost factors that you see listed in the overview that I mentioned on page 8 will show you the cost factors for each of the respective districts, if you'd like to see those. And we implemented those over a 5-year time period through HB 273, and that was thanks to the Education Task Force at that time. So here we see Nome's cost factor is 1.450. So we take that cost factor times the school size adjustment where we left off, and we are now at 1.295.65 in our adjustment to the ADM. So special needs funding, this will be our next step. It includes special education, except for intensives. It covers vocational education, gifted, talented, and bilingual, bicultural. These are block funded at 20%. So for Nome, where we left off after adjusting for the cost factor, we multiply that by 1.20 to arrive at 1,554.78. So it's like a 20% add-on. And then we have the reference below where it says column R, page 8 of the overview, if you would like to reference it in that.
Question?
Representative Sponholz.
Thank you, through the chair. Just to clarify, the 20% special needs factor is across the boards, across the state?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
So the next adjustment is vocational and technical funding. This is also referred to as career and technical education, or CTE. It's funded at a factor of 1.015. It is intended to assist districts in providing career and technical education services in grades 7 through 12. This excludes costs associated with administrative expenses and instruction in general literacy, mathematics, and job readiness skills. So we're going to apply this to the Nome Public Schools, and where we left off was 1.554.78. We multiply it times our factor of 1.015. We are now at an adjusted ADM of 1,578.10. And again, the reference at the bottom as we're moving across that page.
Excuse me. Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, and maybe to just follow up on Representative Cobb's question, if these are applied to every school district across the state, what is the basis for having them as steps? Why not just build it into the initial equation right at the beginning, or add it all in at the end, rather than going step by step through, you know, step three, step four, and going from there?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, not being the creator of this formula, but as I see it for myself, it was, in my opinion, a way of identifying that they really wanted an adjustment for these kids and know that it was represented in the formula. I understand, I think if I hear you correctly, that this is a very long formula and there's a lot of steps. Why are we going through all of this? And it is complex, but I think funding and education is complex, and our state is so unique that in order to meet it and stay equalized, I think we have to have some of this added gyration and steps through the formula. If there is a simpler way and a kinder way of doing this, I am absolutely open to it.
Okay.
So now we're going to look at intensive service funding. A school district will receive funding for intensive services students that, one, are receiving intensive services, and two, enrolled on the last day of this 20-day school count period, so we're doing a head count, and meet the intensive qualifications for each intensive student. An intensive student is worth 13 times the of a single count. So what that means is an intensive student costs $77,090. So we're going to apply this to Nome Public Schools. When they projected, they had 5 intensive students. We multiply that times 13. That's now 65. And when you apply that where we left off on the adjusted ADM, you now have 1,643.1.
And if I could step in with a question, how is a student designated intensive?
Chairman Ortiz, that is determined by statute. There are categories for determining intensive students, and we actually have a special ed director who can speak to that, not present, but can speak to that and answer that more clearly. But they are responsible for ensuring that these kids are intensive and meeting these. And the department does try to keep due diligence on top of all new students that come through, get reviewed, to make sure they're truly intensive and getting the services they require.
Representative Espanos.
Thank you, through the chair. Just to follow up, so for intensive students, this is not a formula. This is based on actual students.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So now we're going to go grab those correspondence kids. Districts offering a correspondence program receive funding based on 90% of the correspondence ADM. So that means that a correspondence student is worth $5,337 in the formula. So we're going to apply this for Nome. And remember, we haven't put the correspondence kids through any of these adjustments. They're picked up at the end. And they get a direct multiplier of 90%. And so since they projected 10, that's obviously 9. And 9 is added to where we left off on our district adjustment. And it is now increased to 1,652.10. And we have now arrived at our adjusted ADM. So that we multiply the district adjusted ADM by the base student allocation. The base student allocation, which is also referred to as BSA, will give us basic need, and this is the amount that will run the district and help pay for the education in that district. The base student allocation is $5,930. So with that applied, the district to run Nome is $9,796,953. The reference is below. But to give you a perspective on this, I have added the base student allocation pencil chart. This is also available on our website. It shows the history of the BSA moving through the past 10 years. The amounts that are above the pencils with lines underneath them references formula funds that were paid. They are one-time grants that were issued outside the formula using the adjusted ADM from the formula. So this is just to give some historical perspective. So we're going to do just a quick summary. You can see all the steps that we went through to finally arrive at our adjusted ADM and find out what is the basic need for Nome Public Schools. We did our school size. They didn't have hold harmless. They had a cost factor of 1.45. We applied special needs, our CTE. We took their intensives and multiplied them by 13. We added them, and then we looked at our correspondence, added them in. And finally, we reach our AADM, or Adjusted Average Daily Membership. So now we're to that other half of the formula, where we go, who pays? What are the components of basic need? Because the districts will always get paid basic need. There's required local contribution, there's federal impact aid, and state aid. So first we're going to look at required local contribution. The current year full and true value as provided annually by the state assessor's office is multiplied by 2.65 mils for the purposes of calculating required local effort for foundation funding. So for the example we are going to do here, we will be using the 2015, it runs on a calendar year, full value. Okay, so it says in 1417 that the lesser of the equivalent of 2.65 mils of the full and true value, but not to exceed 45% of the school district's prior year basic need will be used as required local. So basically what this is saying is we're going to run these two calculations. We're going to look at them as you see here, and we're going to, the lesser of the two will be selected as the district's required local contribution. When the majority of the districts land on the 2.65 mils of their full and true value, just as you can see Nome did at $970,438. Prior year basic need, so this would have taken 45% of FY16's basic need for the calculation. You see that created a higher calculation at $4,476,027. The three districts that do not fall under the 2.65 mils and fall under 45% of prior year basic need are North Slope, Skagway, and Valdez. So now we need to look at the federal. Title VII. It used to be called Title VIII, but with the implementation of Every School Succeeds Act, ESSA, that was revamped and it moved it to Title VII.
Excuse me, if I can step in on that last point that you made. You mentioned the three districts that fell into the category of the 0.45 or
the 45%.
45%. Was there any common characteristics of those districts that caused them to fall into that category?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Yes. Two of them are on the pipeline, Valdez and North Slope. So their full valuation is very high. And then Skagway is really big tourism, and so they always fall. It's very close. Theirs is very close, but they always end up at the 45%.
When you say they're really big tourism, in other words, the properties within Skagway are largely tourist-orientated businesses, properties, those kinds of things, and so therefore they have a high property value? Is that what you're saying?
Chairman Ortiz, I actually would defer to the assessor on that since he is the expert. That my understanding is that because of the tourism and the place that it's one of the aspects of the property valuation, but really the state assessor is the expert on that.
Okay, thank you.
So Title VII federal impact aid payments are received from March 1st through the last day of February are used as payment for basic need. The state must first deduct out the federal funding for special education, or SPED, one-fifth native lands, and construction funds. So for known public schools, the payments received from March 1st through the end of February, there were no special ed fundings in that. They don't apply for native lands or construction funds. So that meant everything that came in was on the table to be applied towards the formula and or to go into the formula through the deduction process. So before we do that, we have to come up with the impact aid percentage. Required local contribution, we just calculated that. We're going to divide it by a budgeted local contribution. And what this means is budgeted local contribution is, for the purposes of calculating an impact aid percentage, is found in the budgets they submit every year on July 15th and may consist of one of the four, city appropriations, investment earnings, in-kind services, and other local. So In our example here, remember the required local was 970,438. We looked at their budgets. They had a total budgeted local of 2,304,952. We then divided into the required local amount to find out how much of a percentage we will apply against the basic need and the impact aid. So now what you see here is impact aid. We're going to now determine how much of that impact aid, $60,000, will be applied to basic need. It says that 90% of eligible impact aid received by school districts is multiplied by the impact aid percentage. Now here you're hearing there's two percentages going on here, and that can be a little confusing. So we're going to take the $60,000, and we're first going to apply that 42.10% for giving above and beyond the requirement. But our statute says we're also going to apply 90%. So that makes us arrive at the $22,744. So the district has retained everything above and beyond that up to $60,000 in federal impact aid. So what you see here is the state aid for known public schools. We said that they will be paid basic need. So we're going to subtract out required local, the $974.38. The impact aid at $22,744 to arrive at what the state aid will be, or the portion that the state will cover. And that's $8,803,771. There are additional funds above basic need. There's additional local contribution, and there's quality schools grant. So when you're calculating the additional local contribution, again, we're going to have another two calculations we have to run. So it's going to be the greater of 2 mils of the tax base, or 23% of the district's current year basic need, and state funds calculated on that adjusted ADM can be contributed but not exceeded. So when you run the calculation, the 2 mils of the full and true value, you arrive at $732,406. So when we run the second calculation of the 23% of current year basic need and funds calculated on adjusted ADM, that would be your quality schools grant. It will be the greater of those two is the 23% of basic need and funds calculated on AADM at the $2,259,379. Just to point out, when I was speaking to the pencil chart, I mentioned those one-time grants that were above the chart. Those were calculated on adjusted ADM, and so if those existed in the current year, we would also figure that calculation in right here under the 23%. So it was, the legislature was kind of capturing all those funds so that to determine what the cap will be or the maximum local contribution. So when we determine the maximum local contribution, you add your required local that we have at $970,000, and you add the additional local, which we determine at $2,259,379, to get at our maximum local, or what some refer to as the local cap, $3,229,817. So that additional local contribution is money that is above basic need. Finally, there's quality schools grant. Under AS 1417-480, it provides a quality school funding grant of the district's adjusted ADM multiplied by $16. So here you see we took the adjusted ADM for known public schools, multiply it by $16, and that amount is $26,434. The quality schools grant, began in 1998. The purpose of the program is to increase student achievement through methodical improvement of Alaska's public schools. The Quality School Initiative promotes this school improvement by providing clear standards for schools to attain. And these standards fall into four categories of implementation of student standards and assessment, like Alaska English Language and Mathematics Standards, other student standards and assessment. It also is professional standards for teachers and administrators. Three is family, school, business, and community networks. And four is school excellence standards. and the districts apply annually and submit a report annually. And this is also provided on our website.
Representative Johnston.
Thank you. You answered. I was wondering if it's easy access to the results as far as this grant. Annual results. So, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So the components of state aid or state aid entitlement. So for non-public schools, their state aid is the $8,803,771, plus we put the Quality Schools Grant in there, so that their total state entitlement becomes $8,830,205. So are there any, I'm going to move on to the regional education attendance area if there are no questions, and if you're ready to go through this again.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Cobb.
I think what we're seeing here is a great visual example that the rule of simplicity has been lost over decades. And I think, you know, we're kind of picking up the pieces of that and managing, but that when you have something this complex, it is that much harder for us to provide legislative oversight. Anytime you have that many individual things making adjustments, I'm sure there's reasons, you know, why we got to where we are, but I just think it's something to think about, ways we can simplify the law so that it is easier to put these cost factor adjustments, follow it, track it, and know that we're doing the right thing by every district and local community in every case. Because, I mean, I was good in math. I am good in math. That was hard to follow. You know, now if I did it every day, it would be easy. But I think to provide oversight, the more simple we can get at things, the better. Anyway, just.
Thank you, Mr. Kopp. You want to be the simplification star for the state?
I am. I'm getting motivated.
So my question would be, you've been working with the formula for how many years, Ms. Lobo?
Since 2000, so 16 years.
Okay. So you have probably a pretty clear sense of where there's weaknesses in the formula, where the results of the formula, rather than, quote, equal, you know, make things equal, maybe don't. How does the overall thing work out, in your opinion? In other words, it's complicated, but in the end, does it do a good job of making the education as equal as possible, or at least the funding for education as equal as possible throughout the state?
Chairman Ortiz, in my opinion, it is a very long formula, and I completely empathize. However, it has been a functional working formula that, through my years of using it, has been very solid in keeping us equalized across the state. And this is such a big aspect for us because of the federal impact aid dollars. The only way to use those federal dollars in this formula, we have to stay equalized, which means that there's no disparity amongst the districts and that one district doesn't get a greater advantage over another. So while this formula may be long, it ultimately ends up fair, and that I think is very important. Both financially, so that we retain that impact aid funding, but also so it's a fair education for all the kids funding-wise around the state. But that's in my opinion.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, I'm just in ballpark, about how much do we federal impact aid comes into the state?
Oh, through the chair, Representative Parrish, we across the state get about $130 million that are going directly to the districts, and realize I have to put it through deductions, and then ultimately what's applied is between $70 and $80 million to the formula. And you can see that to some degree on this overview on page 9, I believe it is. It'll show you that at the very bottom. A rough idea of what that looks like.
Thank you.
Representative Berman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The
Right. As you said, at the bottom of column F, $80,179,000 roughly in deductible impact aid is in the formula. But what happens to the other $50 million or so? You said $130 million of federal impact aid comes into the state. Where is the other $50 million accounted for?
All of that funding goes directly to the districts. All districts apply directly to...
Oh, it's outside of the formula.
Correct. Okay. That's correct. Excuse me, through the chair.
And also, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment. The maximum local contribution, so what we see at the end of the line for Nome is $8,830,000 roughly in state, in total state aid, or the total state grant through the foundation formula, and Nome itself could contribute up to $3,229,000 in addition to that. So their budget looks something like $11 or $12 million total, depending on their local contribution.
Through the chair, Chairman Drummond, that is correct. If the city can contribute that high, yes, that would be true.
But they have a range of where they can.
That's
the
correct.
Minimum, the required local contribution at $970,000, and additional possible local contribution. So that's up to the city how much they want to augment their school's budget.
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Representative Johnston.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm back to my question as far as the Quality School Initiative. Are the results of that dependent as far as the Alaska educational standards for students? And since we have had various different sets of standards, I'm on the website and I'm trying to find the results, and so I'm confused finding those results.
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I would recommend contacting our department. It's actually run by the Teacher Learning Support, and they have a director that oversees that and puts together those reports. So they could either provide you with that data. I'm not sure if it's published online,
okay.
In all honesty.
So, I would be interested in having that data.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding the eligible federal impact aid properly. It looks like the federal government is sending the school districts about $120 million, of which we deduct, or which allows us to deduct $80 million from the state's obligation to the school districts. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, that's a reasonable assessment. It's just when we get basic need, what we're doing is we first start with the required local, then we do federal, and then state takes up the rest of the bill. And there are a handful of districts on there that don't even get impact aid, and so the state will come up and pay that bill, so to speak.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. So now we get to hear about REAAs, and in particular, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, catch and a mute.
Okay. Representative Fanslin.
Sorry, not to drag us back into this, but so I'm a little fuzzy on the minimum local contribution and the maximum local contribution. I mean, I get the minimum part. That makes sense to me. This is what your community is expected. What is the idea behind having a cap, or the rationale behind saying, you know, somehow you discovered a lot of money and you want to give, you know, $10 million to your school district or your school? Why cap them?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, it's a good question, and that comes back to the equalization, and so there's no disparity amongst all the districts. So is we cannot exceed on the federal test that we do every year for impact aid, 25% in disparity. So you'll notice there's a 23% that we've put in as a to protect the formula and keep us as an equalized state.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so we're going to do the Keshemute School District Regional Educational Attendance Area, or I will refer to as REAA. So with the Kashimia School District. We are also using the projected FY17, and they have a single site and a community in Chibok Community School, and it is 324 ADM that was submitted. And I put a note at the bottom of this page. You'll notice that falls between that 101 and 425. So what's going to happen is they're going to get two adjustments for this single site because of that, and because our community falls between the 101 and 425. With that said, I'm going to take their case 6 total that was provided at 196, go up into my references, see that in reference 5, that is the formula we want to use. We will plug it in, 196 minus 150, multiplied by the 1.08, adding the 218.10, and we now have adjusted the school size for case 6 at 267.78. Now the 712 average daily membership was 128. So we went up to the references again, and we see that it falls under school size reference 4. And what we do is plug that in again, subtract out 75, multiply by 1.27, add the 122.85, and now we have a school size adjustment of 190.16 for the 7 through 12. And we'll add those together so we get our total school size adjustment. Now we're going to see if Kashimute has a hold harmless provision activated. And what you'll see that is listed up there, we again put the FY16 ADM and the school size adjusted ADM, and again the FY17 projected ADM and school size adjusted ADM. Now when you do this comparison for the school district, you see that there was a decrease of 22.36, but was it 5%? And what you see here is when we divide in the 480.3 to the 22.36, your result is 4.66% over the prior year. So the result is hold harmless provision was just missed on this. So now we're going to take where we left off, the 457.94, and we're going to put in there district cost factor, which is 1.619. And you see that it increases the ADM to 741.4. We are then going to bring in our special needs factor and do the 20% add-on. So when we multiply that in, we get 889.68. And then, of course, we come to the CTE, or the career technical education factor, 1.015 multiplied in, and it is 903.03. And the references are below each part there, so you can follow it on the overview. So the Kashimut School District, we see that for their intensive counts, they projected 7. So we will multiply that times 13. That gives us 91. We're going to add that to where we left off, and now we're at 994.03. And we then look to see if they have any correspondence kids, and the school district does not have any correspondence kids, so we will move forward. And what we result in is the district adjusted ADM, and now we can determine what their basic need is when we multiply it times the BSA, 5,930. So the basic need for Kashimute School District is 5,894,598. So now we're going to do the component.
Representative Talrico.
We've gotten to that point where we went through both. So I just want to be very clear that the special needs student and the intensive student are always separate and kept separated, correct? Just so we have that on record. There's never a combination of those two.
Through the chair, Representative Talrico, that is correct.
Thank you.
So we have the components of basic need, who pays. Now what you may notice here is there's only two components when it comes to an REAA, because they do not have a required local effort, because they do not have the ability to tax. So we move directly to federal impact aid. So the payments received by the Kashimute School District from March 1st through the end of February are $3,181,975. less $668,010 because those were one-fifth of native lands. There were some SPED funding and some construction funds that were removed from that initial total that the REAA will keep as their funding. So now we know that we can look at the remaining funds of $2,513,965. So the eligible impact aid received by a school district is multiplied by 90%. An REAA has no local taxing authority, so the full 90% is applied to determine the deductible impact aid. So what you see here is we take that $2,513,965 and we apply the 90%. So the result is $2,262,569 will be the deductible impact aid that we will put towards basic need for this district. So here you can see on the top that we said that basic need is $5,894,598. We deduct out impact aid at $2,262,569. And the result is that the state aid will be $3,632,029. So the funding components, as you know, they also will get quality schools. So we take $16 times their adjusted ADM, and that arrives at $15,904. So to get our total state entitlement, and we add that to state aid, we end up at $3,647,933 paid by the state. I'd also like to state that in our formula, if the amount appropriated by the legislature is insufficient to meet the total amount authorized, then the district's basic need will be reduced pro rata. And finally, we have assembled a slide here that is actually based on FY 2018. Projections so that you can see what you can have an overview of what you're working with as you go through your legislative process. But it shows at the top of this slide how the ADM starts and grows through the process to arrive at the adjusted ADM. And then below that, we have the tiles that show how it's progressing through and being paid for, with the basic need being determined, and then the bottom tiles is how basic need is being paid with required local, deductible impact aid. And these totals that you're seeing are the bottom line totals for all districts, so that you could get an idea of the grand total of the foundation. And the components of funding are state general funds, public school trust fund, and federal impact aid. And now we have reached
Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, these charts here, do you have them in kind of sortable Excel spreadsheets that we could have?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Fansler, yes, we do. Actually, I recommend that you go to our school finance. What you do is you go to our website. There will be tabs across the top. There will be a finance and facility tab. If you go there, go ahead and find the link that takes you to school finance and foundation. It's a little step-by-step. We do have them there where you can select several different years and get Excel sortable or PDF. And if you want me to guide, you can always give me a call too. But yes, they are available online.
And Chair Ortiz, this is Heidi Teschner for the record. We can definitely send you that link so that you don't have to write that down, Representative Fansler. But for the whole committee, we'll get you that information.
Okay. I wanted to go back to the, before we're done today, to the, you made a statement about REAAs and what are the, and their inability to tax, what are the characteristics that are such that they are, quote, unable to tax?
Chairman Ortiz, what it is that because they are an unorganized borough, city borough, they do not hold any taxing authority in their district. They are not organized. Most of their lands are federal lands. Essentially, it's that they just don't have the ability to issue a property tax, so they can't issue funds to help support funding to basic need. I know you're looking for a more involved answer than that, and it's not coming off the top of my head, so I'm happy to provide that.
So are these areas in general like where there's no taxes being collected, like no sales taxes, no, certainly there's income taxes that are being paid, federal income taxes anyway. We don't.
But there's no local, there's no ability to do any kind of local tax or run any kind of mill rate against the property.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Spahnholz?
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I am curious, just given that the special needs factor is a formula, how that, you know, how that contrasts against actual number of special needs students in each district. Is that information that you have available and could share with us?
Through the Chair, Representative Spahnholz. Actually, that would probably, yes, that would be through the SB 36 report that we have, and it is available online, but we can certainly provide it to you, and it explains why they elected to do, instead of categorical itemization of this, that the logic was to bring all those together into a more simplified process for the formula.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm really curious to look at that. When I was looking at the intensive needs column here on the spreadsheet that's on page 8 and 9, it seems that there is a very wide range, and it's not necessarily related to population, and so it's not a clear percentage. And so I'm curious to look at the number of special needs students by district as well, so that we can understand whether or not that's a rational formula or it needs to be revisited.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Spahnholz, just so I'm clear, are you speaking to the 20% or just the intensives or both?
The 20%, and I was using the intensives as sort of a comparison point for myself to try to, you know, sort of understand, you know, to understand that a little bit. I understand intensive students are a completely different, on a completely different sort of spectrum than a special needs student. But given that the wide range of the number of intensive needs students, it seemed that, for example, Manana had a grossly disproportionate number of intensive needs students for the size of that community, that I'd want to understand sort of the actual number of special education students by district in order to sort of evaluate whether or not that 20% is still the most rational way to approach special education funding.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Johnston.
And I'm not sure really through the Chair. Thank you. Who I should ask this question, but do you ever track how often the student count corresponds with the dividend each year? Is that part of, just as you're looking at policy driven? I have been in places where students have been moved around due to the dividend. And I was just wondering the impact of that on school districts, and has the Department of Education ever looked at that?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnston, no, the Department has not looked at that.
Any other questions today? Well, seeing none, I'd like to thank Ms. Loba and Ms. Teschner for your presentations. I know I share some of the frustrations of Representative Kopp. It's as clear as mud to me, but we're gonna work at that and see if I can go back and do my own studying. But thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. And our next subcommittee meeting will be Monday, January 30th from 8 to 9 a.m. here in 106. We will review pupil transportation, boarding home grants, youth in detention, and special services budget components. And I am going to turn the gavel over now to, I guess, well, I will technically adjourn the sub-finance committee meeting and turn the gavel over to Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. And I'd like to remind House Education members that our next meeting will begin at 9 a.m. on Monday, January 30th, which you just heard about. And with that, we are adjourned today at 9:08 p.m. a.m., excuse me.